Okay, just a brief introduction to what I'd like to talk about today is, as I'm sure many of you have seen signs for the Rabbi Roblowski, as I think yesterday was a little bit of an explanation of what they're trying to do regarding the learning of Gemara for Caleb Mayer, Zichron Lebracha, and other signs going on about different streak opportunities. Apparently you can speak to your Rebbeim and they're supposed to compensate you as much as you agree with them about whatever streaks you go through. Definitely, I think, streaks are very important. And I'm not sure the compensation part, at least not for me, but every other Rebbeim, I think we're interested in compensating you. You can feel free to reach out to them. But the idea of streaks, of to push a streak, and the idea of learning the Ilu Nishmas of a chaver of many hours, I want to spend a little time addressing and to explain the backdrop of this parsha and next week's parsha as well. Before I do, though, I want to tell you something I hope that you all understand and realize. The goal that every single Rebbe has in this yeshiva, and I imagine that every Rebbe in every yeshiva has for the Talmidim, is my assumption, my hope, is to give you the best life in the world. You should be the happiest people in the world. You should be the most proud of yourselves in the world. That is the only goal that the Rebbeim have for you. If we felt that the happiest person in the world would be the guy who does the best in the stock market, then we'd spend the entire year, well, first ourselves learning about it ourselves, and then sharing with you what we learned about, hoping that you would become the best in the world in the stock market, because that would certainly then give you happiness. We don't believe that. Not that it means you won't be happy with success in the market. We do not believe there's a direct correlation between that and your happiness. We have one purpose in our year together, our 2 years together. You should be the happiest, most proud people at the end of your lives for what you've accomplished in your day. I would only imagine, I'm assuming it's true, that you have the same goals for yourself. That's my hope. You would like nothing more than to be the happiest version of yourselves, the most proud of you and your families that you could possibly be in the future. I assume we share that goal. If we do not share that goal, you can ignore everything I'm about to say right now, you can ignore it. Because I'm speaking to someone who I assume shares the goals that we have for you. We might have different opinions on how to get there. I'm going to share with you what I think is MS. People who done this have seemed to suggest this, believe also this is the way to do it. And those who tried other directions, I think, will fall short of this goal of being the happiest, most proud person you can of yourselves. One thing that leads to happiness, and I'll get to happiness in a minute, is life experiences, obviously. What you go through in life, what you do on your own, how you react to things that happen around you, the way that you're able to do those things should lead, if we do it properly, to the greatest level of happiness in our lives. Now, you can have two people witness the exact same moment. They watched the same movie, they were in the same exact event, and they come up with exactly opposite conclusions, which is normal, because people are sophisticated, and they bring to the table with them their own mindset, their own perspective on life, their own thoughts. And therefore, some of those perspectives on lives will lead you to the greatest happiness, and those moments will be very inspiring for you. And other moments in time, some other people at the same moment will be completely turned off and become depressed after that. A very extreme example, although I'm not touching this with a 10-foot pole, I'll just mention it right now, is the Holocaust. You had people who survived the Holocaust as more inspired and more religiously connected than ever, though it's hard to imagine. But people did. There are those who gave up everything after they left the Holocaust. They survived it because they didn't want anything to do with God anymore. Same exact experiences. They witnessed the horrors and the atrocities, and some were more inspired and some rejected. How could the same event give birth to two completely opposite reactions? Because it's not the event that matters, it's our perspective on things, on the event and life in general. Part of being happy is when you don't look back and regret. Regret leads to lack of satisfaction, frustration. So we need to find ourselves, how do we have experiences in life? We've got the best perspective from. We react in certain ways, and we leave without regret. That should breed, again, it sounds very simple, that should give us an extremely happy life. Let's talk about our experiences for a second. When we talk about going through life, experiencing certain things, and being very happy with those experiences, it depends a lot on what your goal is in mind. I mentioned up until now that if your goal is to have a lot of money, then you would have experiences that would hope to lead to a lot of money. And if you'd be correct that money breeds happiness, then succeeding in those areas would give you a lot of happiness. I'm not going to suggest that. I don't think that's correct or accurate at all. Look around in the world, people who have a lot of money doesn't oftentimes equal happiness. You know, how many people who have a lot of money are in some form of addictive therapies for drug or alcohol abuse? How many of them, you know, children are themselves very either saddened or God would take their own lives? There's too many to count that would put a correlation between money and happiness. So I'm not going to go that route or that angle. Again, it doesn't mean that money is bad. I'm not saying that at all either. I don't think that is the solution, the answer for happiness, though. Now, I want to talk about streaks for a second. That's how it says streak. So what's the point of a streak? Why would people try to go on a streak? So they're trying to push themselves to a behavior, a certain behavior they believe, again, will breed happiness. If they succeed in this behavior enough times and they start to make a real, a movement out of this behavior, they think that will breed happiness. There are many famous streaks that are out there. Sports streaks, could be personal streaks. But I'll tell you one thing that usually does not come up on a streak. People usually have their bad actions streaking. Oh, I've drank an alcohol for 41 days in a row. I'm on a streak. Usually you don't do that. Maybe it's true about you, but it's not what people are counting, hopefully. They're not trying to keep track and put a feather in their cap for those accomplishments. I also lashon hara for 101 straight days. Might be true. Nothing to brag about. A streak is something where you're working on something and becoming better because of it. I haven't missed the minyan in X amount of time. I'm proud of that. I'm working on that as my streak. I think that might give me a happiness for some reason. When you set goals in your mind, the reason for the goal is you feel that goal, if you accomplish it well, will bring you a level of happiness. But we first have to figure out what we think makes us happy. If we don't know the answer to that question, then streaks are silly. Goals are silly. You can accomplish a lot of great things. You can, you can carry the most feathers at one time. Guinness World Records. Carry the most feather one time. You know, there's always these crazy records people can set. Okay, it's very nice. You made it to the famous Book of World Records. But so what? Like, did something leave with you? Did you get any excitement out of that deal? Are you a better person for it? The first thing to figure out is, what are we doing here? What's our goal in life? I learned today a very intense piece in Rabbeinu Yonah in Pirkei Avos, Perek Aleph, Mishnah Yud Zayin, where the Mishnah there says that the greatest level of benefit for the body is quiet, is silence. And he brings down, I'm not talking about silence from Lashon Hara, he says. Of course, you don't take Lashon Hara. I'm talking about stop talking. Don't stop talk. You shouldn't just talk plainly. Why not? He quotes the following thing, and one of my students who missed today was very bothered by this. How can it be that they're telling you you shouldn't even talk about topics that are just like not bad or good? Again, we can make up examples. I mean, the one I shared with you was like fantasy football. I can't like sound like hock around about how my team did this week. I shouldn't schmooze it out with the guy next to me. So he says the Hasidim wouldn't do that. I don't mean Hasidim like people who dress. I mean, people who are pious people wouldn't do that. Why not? Why not? So I asked my student who asked me this question, have you ever like taken a dollar out of your wallet and just burned it? Because you want to see like how fast it burns. So I imagine you haven't. I know a few years ago, we actually tried ripping 20 shekel bills because they said you can never rip those things. They're not rippable. But we never succeeded. We never would intentionally destroy something we valued. We wouldn't rip money. We wouldn't burn money. So do you value yourself? Do you value your life? Do you value your ability to speak? If you don't value those things, then of course you can waste as much time as you want to. If your words mean nothing to you, then certainly speak whatever you want to speak about. No reason not to. If you value yourself, then why would you ever want to waste your words? If you value your money, you wouldn't want to waste your money. If you value your eyesight, you wouldn't want to look at things you shouldn't be looking at. If you value your body, you shouldn't be abusing it in ways that are unhealthy for it or religiously not inspiring. It's all about what you value. So chaval, we don't value ourselves. I would never take money and try to ruin it. But I'm regularly willing to hurt my body. Whether it be, again, in different paraphernalia people might use that are not in your best interest for your health. Why? Because you don't care about yourself. Your money, you care a lot about. Yourself, very little bit about. Could you imagine if you would go and you would walk into someone's, you know, they bought the Mona Lisa from the Louvre Hotel, from the Louvre Museum in Paris. And you go to see the Mona Lisa in their home, featured on their wall, like we have back in the back, not the Mona Lisa, but a picture of Yerushalayim, the old city. And you go to see the Mona Lisa, and what they do when they serve you dinner that night to celebrate their purchase, the tablecloth they used was the Mona Lisa. That's what they use it for. They use it for to put on the table so you can eat it, put your plates on it. You would be like, what? This is the one of the finest pieces of art in the world. He's like, yes, so I'm using it. I'm using it. It's very practical for me. It's covering my table so my table doesn't get dirty. But the Mona Lisa is so valuable. It's more valuable than your table is. It's your opinion. I like my table. I don't want it to get dirty. Mona Lisa, it's, you know, just a painting. Certainly we'd all imagine that guy should be checked into an insane. He just paid millions of dollars for a tablecloth. Sounds like it's a big waste. If you believed that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave you a body to serve him, that's the only reason we have it. Just to serve him. Nothing else. You do other things with it also, but just serve him. To use your body as a tablecloth, for whatever habits or interests that you have, so that would be a terrible crime. If you looked at your body, that as the Chassidim HaRishonim did, as a klisharis, as a vehicle, as a vessel to serve God with, then how could you ever do anything with it that wouldn't be the best interest of serving God? I couldn't talk about something I shouldn't talk about. I should look at something I shouldn't be looking at. And the list goes on. Now, again, we're only human beings. We're not Chassidim HaRishonim. We're regular people. Now, don't expect us to stop talking about mundane things. But you should at least have a level of understanding of what you were given, what you're using these gifts for. If our goals are to treat our bodies properly, the way they were intended, then our streaks should reflect that also. Our streaks should reflect that. That means when I have a goal in mind right now, my goal should be something that will make my body into a more holy body. Something, you can pick whatever it is that you like to pick, but something that will make your body holier. Davening, learning, not bottling, whatever, doing chesed. So many options out there, but if the goal that you realize is that your body has an ability to be used as a kli to serve God, that's why it was created, there's a long list of things that we can use it for and use it properly for. That's our streaks. Sometimes in life we kind of experience something that we don't really want to experience, but we have to react to it. As I mentioned before, the Holocaust. People saw it. They lived through it. Now what's your response? How do you go beyond that after having seen it? I want to talk for a second about something that Rablowski the last year has been working on, and unfortunately this year it's different than it was in the years past, which is learning for Caleb. In years past, the hope was that he would have a refuah shleima. That was our hope. That's why we did it to learn for his neshama. But we hoped in the back of our mind it would lead to a refuah. Many people in this room have no idea who Caleb is anyways. You see him as a picture outside by the basketball court. Which, by the way, you know, Akar Sof to his family for allowing us to use that as well. But the last time I saw Caleb was about 2 years ago, to the day almost. Because I went on my recruiting trip during this part of the year. And he was still in yeshiva at the time. And he went back for some tests when I was gone, and I never saw him again. Now, what's the goal right now with learning for Caleb? What's the goal? Our goal is to do something more than we otherwise would have done for the ilu neshama of a person who's not with us anymore. Whether you ever met him or you didn't meet him, you know someone who cared about him, and the rebbeim all cared about him. The goal that we have is to do something more than you would have done otherwise. Which means this is not a competition, though we're having fun with it also. You shouldn't be looking around, well, my Rebbe is giving me shit right now, it's not fair. This isn't a game. This is not a game. This is the opportunity that you have to take something very serious, a person, a young man's life that has ended early, and to say, I'm committing some extra time for his neshama. That's the point. That's the whole entire point. Remember, last week he did it, it's unbelievable, he got so excited about it. But do not lose focus on what the goal over here is. The goal is to sit and to learn and spend your time productively for someone who can't do it anymore, who wanted nothing more than to be here doing that right now. Nothing more than that. That's all he wanted. And you have the opportunity now to have Caleb in your life, whether you ever met him or not, to play a significant role of your year if you do this part well. L'shem Shemayim, with perks along the way. Those are icing on the cake. That's not the cake. The cake is that you're dedicating time in your day that you wouldn't otherwise have been so careful about. Because you understand there's a significance and importance to living life in a certain way. And Caleb is the push for us to do that. A student of mine years ago, when I was in Florida, he had a very close friend of his that died in the army. And he also wanted to memorialize his friend. And what he did was on Yom HaZikaron, because he died in the army, he decided, I'm going to do what this friend wanted to do. He would have loved to play football and barbecue. I'm telling you a true story. This happens every Yom HaZikaron since then. His friends get together, they play football, and they barbecue. To memorialize their comrade, their brother who fell in the army. I can't promise. I'm almost positive. In Shemayim right now, that's not what he's getting nachas from. From them barbecuing and playing football. That's what you remember about your fallen friend. It's such a waste of a body if that's how you go down. The opportunity now to make our bodies better, stronger, more serious for someone who can't anymore. That's the goal. Because it's how we react to an experience around us that we didn't want. But it's our reaction to that experience. You control how you react to experiences. All upon you. There's an unbelievable article by Malcolm Gladwell. The book called David and Goliath. Hopefully you've heard of it. If not, something very excited to check out at some point in time. People who've lost a parent at a very young age, how have they reacted in the future to it? So he went through the encyclopedia. The person he is, Marvin Eisenstadt, who was a psychologist in the early 60s. He went through a list in the encyclopedia of people who have a lot written about them, which means that they clearly are people who are noteworthy people in their lives. And he said, by the age of 20, 45% of those people had lost a single parent, at least one parent. And he found this shocking. 20 years old, to lose a parent is very young. No one should know such things. But 45% of successful people who were defined that way by how much was written about them in encyclopedia have lost a parent. And other stats will tell you, people who are found in jail, a large percentage of them also have lost a parent. How could it be? How can it be that you see something? The same thing you see. Some people push themselves to greater heights and some people don't. It's all about your attitude. If your attitude is, I want to find things to push me greater, then you'll find those things, unfortunately, sometimes. You'll find those things. If your attitude is, I'm a bitter person, give me more reasons to be bitter, you'll find those things also. You control the glasses that you wear when you look at things. We live in a culture when it's the victims. Everyone's a victim. Poor this person. Poor that person. From that color skin. From that race. Poor, poor, poor. And you can look that way. Everyone's Nebuch. I'm that person. How is he ever? If you're the victim, your job as the victim is, what do I do now to make myself better? How am I going to make myself a better person because of what happened? Not shame on me. Poor me. Someone help me out. Nebuch. Poor lunch today in the yeshiva. First reaction, what's that to my parents? What a terrible thing going on around me right now. Poor you. Grow up. Buy burgers from the burger bar like you do many other days a week. Figure things out on your own. One of the worst things in technology is you don't grow up. You never grow up. Because when you're frustrated, 18 years old, the first thing you do is you reach out to mommy and daddy. What am I going to do now? And no, it's great because they didn't have this back when they were younger. They know how to solve the problems. But what happens in 25 years from now for you when your kid calls you on the phone? What do I do now, they say to you? You're like, oh, I don't know. Gosh, that's hard. When I was younger, I texted my parents. And they're saying, that's what I'm doing to you right now. Victim. How do you survive? So the truth is, when you have struggles in life, sometimes what you do is you work through them. You sit down with someone, talk it out with them. Here's what happened to me. What frustrated me. How do we get past this? How do we get better because of this? Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, one time, I tell a story about Rav Aaron Lichtenstein one time, that he had done some sort of a march in America, in New York City, for a group of people, I forget what it was for, who had some nebuch, experience in their lives that was very challenging for them. And he marched with other non-Jews and Jews alike. And when the Rosh Yeshiva of YU at the time, who were from Eastern Europe, heard that he took a shear to go march, they didn't understand what the march was for, and they blasted him. They talked and in front of a Talmud, I think Rabbi David said he was there. They talked to him with such like anger. How could you do that? These big gedolim are rebuking Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zichron Levracha. And at the end of the whole thing, they misunderstood what he had done. So his Talmud, when they left, said to Rav Lichtenstein, "No, why didn't you correct them?" He said, "Correct them? Miss the opportunity to hear Musa from gedolim? Why do I want to stop in mid stride? I'm so lucky to have experienced the Musar rebuke from people who I look up to." They were really wrong what they were rebuking about. It wasn't what they thought it was. But it was an opportunity for him to get better because of it. He didn't stop them in midstream to say, you don't understand what happened. He looked at it as a chance to experience something that will make me better after experiencing it. There is nothing in the world that you experience that has to be bad for you. You can grow from anything. It's just about how you look at it. If you're a person whose drive is to develop and get stronger, then everything is a chance. If your goal is to just like have everything catered to you and everything's about you, getting, then you can have a lot of hard times and you don't get things. It's going to be very challenging. I want to read to you a pasuk in next week's parsha. I'll just close up one more story. The Torah describes that when Yaakov first meets Rachel and Leah, it describes their looks. V'nei Leah rakot, v'rachel haita yifat Torah v'yifat mareh. That Leah's eyes were soft and Rachel was beautiful. Now, Chazal say that her eyes were soft because she cried a lot. Now, why was she crying so much? So, she was crying because she heard she was going to marry Esav. We all know this famous medrash. Look at the medrash inside, though. It's the Gemara in Baba Basra, Daf Kuf Chav Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara is a little different gears than the way Rashi quotes it. The Gemara over here brings down, the way the medrash quotes it, the Gemara brings down over here, it says that Leah would sit by the street corner asking everyone, because everyone knew that the older sister would marry the older brother, that Leah would marry Esav and Rachel would marry Yaakov. And she wanted to know, who's my bashert? Who's my special sweet Esav? And she would go, the show Ellis, Godel Malu, she would ask everyone traveling place to place, what's the older one like? Ramla would say back to her, Ishra, blasphemous Abrios. She's a terrible person. A terrible person. And she got worried. And according to the matter, she started to cry, but the Gemara doesn't say she cried yet. Katan Mahu. What's the younger one like? She said. Ish Tam Yosheva Olim. Sweetheart. Sweetheart of a person. Tam Chacham, what a mensch. And she started to cry. Why is she crying when she hears about Yaakov, not about her Bashert? Because Leah understands that some people in life experience things that are hard to get past. But if two people witness the same upbringing, and one is a sweetheart and a mensch, and one's a monster, that means the monster has a problem with how he looks at the world. The monster doesn't look at the world properly. Things that happen, he takes personally. It's all about him. Pleasure. She doesn't want that. She's terrified of that. If Yaakov would also have been not so great, it's okay. They had a tough upbringing. But once you have the same upbringing, some person experienced it and was inspired by it, then her husband-to-be, who was turned off by it, that's a very scary thing for her. My husband has a terrible perspective on life. I don't want that at all. I was walking from shul today with a guy who lives in my community named Rami Goldberg. He was telling me that one time he went to this museum of television and music. Television and movies, maybe it was. And he said he has this very interesting, fascinating exhibit. You get to watch a scene, like children playing ball in a park. And you pick the music that goes behind that scene. Pick the music. It could be very, cheerful music, and you're like, oh, what a nice, pleasant scene. Or it could be like, bum bum, bum bum, bum bum. And you're like, it's about to happen. Oh my gosh, I'm terrified. Where's the guy hiding? Someone's going to have a tragedy right now. What happened? You're just watching the same scene. Because the music that you play in the background changes everything. When you have a terrifying music, everything is bad. The world is terrible. I'm always a victim. Okay, so then you're always be a victim. And Nebuch, you never be happy. But you look at everything like an opportunity to develop. How do I grow from this experience? I didn't want it to happen, but it's here already. How am I going to get better because of it? Then you become great. And you become great, you don't regret things. You don't feel bad about things. You know what you're doing is right. The Chazon Ish brings down, I learned this with Daniel Latani yesterday, he brings down the following, I'll read to you in English. He points out, he suggests, there are plenty of people in life who Nebuch, they started learning late in life. They didn't understand it completely. It was hard for them to get inspired. It happens. But those people reacted one of two ways. They can start to really start from the beginning and try really hard, like Rabbi Akiva did at the age of 40, learn Aleph Beis. Or they can say, I'm going to walk into Shir. You know, in the first grade, they have those little seats. I can't fit in a little seat like that. Everyone's going to laugh at me when I walk into the first grade. It's just not worth it. So I'll read to you a line. Why should you yield in the face of another person's assessment? Why would someone else's glances at you with curiosity? What are you doing here? You never come this year. What are you doing here? In the base of extra? You're in Shacharis? Really? So you think, I don't want people looking at me that way. Just forget, I'm not going to do it. Why yield a person's assessment? Why shouldn't you yield when faced with the endless shame that threatens you if you remain empty, laboring, futile, and born for naught? Be strong. Fortify yourself, human being. Clothe yourself in courage. Energize yourself. You can look at any situation, any scene, it's your call to make. How do you want to play it out? You can be happy with your life. What breeds happiness? No regrets. No regrets. Feeling that I did a good job. I'm proud of what I've done. I worked for it really hard. I'll end with one last parsha point. The beginning of this parsha, and parsha told us, we know that Yaakov tricks, whatever word you want to use, Esav, and he gets the birthright from Esav. Esav was busy that day doing a lot of bad things, it sounds like, in the Medrash. He comes home, he's famished, and he smells Yaakov cooking up a lentil stew. And he says, I'm going to die, I need this stew, I feel like I'm not going to make it. So Yaakov says, let's make a deal. They shake on it, the deal is your birthright for my soup. V'Yaakov nasan le'Esav lechem unezida d'shem. Yaakov gives to Esav the bread. He gives him the soup. V'yochal v'yesht. V'Yaakov v'yelach. He eats it. He drinks it. He gets up and he goes. V'yiveis Esav b'chora. Esav disgraced the b'chora. Now, when did disgrace actually take place? If you asked me, I would have thought when they first shook on it, that's the disgrace. You're trading your firstborn for soup? And it's not even like onion soup. It's lentil soup? Like, who likes that even? That's the disgrace? That's what I thought disgrace should be. Why does grace only happen later? Because in life we make mistakes. You're really hungry. You're famished. You're not going to make it. You think you're not going to make it. It makes sense to sell your birthright for food because you're starving. But what happens when you finish eating and then you drank and you feel fine? Shouldn't you fall on the floor and say, what was I thinking? How could I give this up? Shouldn't you have a broken heart at what you just gave up? But instead, he got up and he left. The busha, the bizayon, is when you trade something so good for a bowl of soup, which is gone a moment after you eat it, and a few hours later you're hungry again. When you trade your life, your eternity, feelings of happiness and joy, for a quick fleeting pleasure, that's the biggest bizayon. That the life you gave me, the body you gave me, I don't view as holy at all. It's a vehicle for me to enjoy animal pleasures. When Yaakov and Esav meet up again, Parshas Vayishlach, so Esav says to Yaakov, "Nu, let's go together. Let's be together now." Yaakov says to Esav, "No, I can't. Because it takes me a lot longer to travel than it takes you. Got a wife, got little kids. you get there quicker than I do. It takes me a long time to travel. What he's saying to Esav is, I'm not a quick fix kind of guy. It takes time. It takes time to put an effort to get places. I have kids. My kids need my help. It's not about feeling good all the time. You're different than I am. We can't walk in the same circles. We can't go to the same parties. You be you. I got a lot to take care of on my end. And they parted ways. And forever that split is in the world. There's the Yaakovs and there's the Esavs. The Esav is the quick fix. Pleasure, pleasure, pleasure. I'll trade anything for a quick bowl of soup. That's the Esav. And the Yaakov is, things take time sometimes. But I view my life as a chariot to serve God. I don't want to waste a word. I don't want to burn a dollar. I want to burn a word. I don't waste the morning. I want experiences in life that make me better. And if you experience the same thing I do, we experience the same thing, you might be turned off by that, but I'm turned on by that. I'm excited to serve God based on what just happened. I'll experience a tragedy in my life. A loved one who leaves the world early, and I will make myself better because of it. While you reject afterwards. Because my music in the background of my picture that I see in the world is a happy song. And I watch children play, and I hear the song in the background, and it's happy, and I'm happy. I'm going to go with no regrets. Because I know at the end of the day, I did everything I could have done. Right now, it's a month before Hanukkah. Early November. The year is not that far advanced yet. There are some of you who are thriving, who are acing your time here so far, at least that I can see. There are some of you who aren't. Some of you are doing a great job in the base medrash and a bad job out of it. Because you don't view your bodies as a chariot to serve God with. And that is a shame. But the biggest shame is that after you're done and you experience what you experienced, you just walk on like nothing happened. Not realizing that you just took a gift that God gave us to serve Him and we threw it in the mud. How can you miss Shacharis? How can you battle and Seder? It's mind-boggling. You got a gift of life. God gives you eyes to look at Torah, to see a person who needs chesed. And instead we're watching whatever we're watching. A mouth to serve a Kodesh Baruch with. Are you telling Lashon Hara with it? And you say bad words? What is wrong with us? And we don't feel, the worst part, we don't feel bad. When it's all said and done, we did it. I'm like, oops. Oops, I shouldn't have said that. I'm like, that's right. That's right. That's what I said. The goal of a streak, the goal of learning for someone else, is to recalibrate who you are, what you're trying to do with yourselves. You have a gift right now. You're in Israel, no worries. No worries. You sit and you can spend time getting close to God. Or you can have a great time with great pictures. You that guy, a funny guy, everyone loves to spend time with you. My class had a reunion, I'll end with this story. 20-year class reunion about 5 years ago. And I was invited to Skype in to my reunion. And I Skyped in, some of my friends, we told old funny high school jokes. At the end of the reunion, one of my friends said to me, my close friend, says to me, Avi, I'm really sorry, you know, that everyone's making so much fun of you, how religious that you are. No, I'm a rabbi, you know, I live in Israel. I got 6 children. I didn't even hear them making fun of me at all. I said, do you think that I care that you poor lost souls, I didn't say to him those words, but I'm thinking that, are making fun of the fact that I feel inspired to connect to God every day of my life? You know what it's like? You work for a top firm on Wall Street. You're ranking it in. So much money, you can't even count it. As you're waiting to work one day, one of your friends says to you, hey, come. Me and the boys are, you know, we're hanging out today. We're going to play some golf today. What do you say? Come with us. I kind of got a job. Pfft. Loser. Job? Come on. We got hang out every day at the corner over here. You know, we have a great time. We don't need jobs. Would you be like, oh my gosh, they're right. Maybe I should quit my job also and hang out with them. Of course you wouldn't. Because some of you are so lost. You just don't get it. There's no happiness at the end of the day for those people. It's regrets. Coulda, shoulda, woulda. The most happy person in the world is someone who's on regret. No regrets. So everything you did was right. You know it was right. You tried your hardest. These next week plus, you have a chance to push yourself to a different level, to make your body a greater chariot to serve God with. If not for you, which it should be, for someone else who can't do it anymore. That goes for the next week and a half, and then the rest of the year afterwards. I'll give you a bracha. You should be the happiest people in the world. Forever. You should be zocha to understand what you were given by God, the gift that you were given, and know how to use it. You should be among those who are the Esavs, the Yaakovs, who take our time to get there. We take our time, we'll get there slowly, and the right time comes. I'm not instant gratification. If I don't get that, I won't get it in the end. But I know whatever I get to in the end, I got there, I felt it, I meant it, and I'm proud of what I became in the end. Have a great rest of your day.